Hi there, you're listening to the November edition of the Drawing the Ideal Self podcast. This podcast is designed to help people who are just in their beginning of familiarity with personal construct psychology, or they want to revise some of the stuff they've learnt on our foundation course or on other courses. Hopefully it will help you to find information about something to do with the theory, but also some examples of practice. So today's edition is an interview with Diane Allen, who is a counselling psychologist and PCP psychotherapist. So I've known Diane in our personal construct psychology group in Coventry for a number of years now. Diane also comes along to our CPD days, and she always brings with her a thoughtfulness and an energy. And I've been in a supervision group with Diane for a number of years as well. And in that group, she asks great questions and makes me think about what I'm doing and why. So I'm hoping that you'll find this interview interesting. Diane has been using PCP for a very long time now and is accomplished in using it in individual therapy sessions. But that doesn't mean that what she says isn't relevant to people who are doing PCP coaching or using PCP in organisations. What I asked her about was her journey in PCP, because I want in this podcast to be able to show that people come to PCP in all kinds of different ways and find uses for it in their own work. And I think Diane illustrates that really well. People won't know necessarily who you are, Di. So can you tell us a bit about your professional background and career? So this is Diane Allen.
Yeah.
Who is a counselling psychologist, now working privately. So yeah. What else would you tell us that's about your background before that?
Right. Well, when I was 18, I trained to be a general nurse. And ended up, when I was qualified, working in an operating theatre.
Oh, did you?
I've done open heart surgery. I've scrubbed up for open heart surgery, scrubbed up for neurosurgery. You name it, we were exposed to it. Then I moved to do psychiatric nursing, and that was a fascinating experience because I went into that thinking about how we could be with people, talking to them, discussing their problems and helping them, and realising that a lot of it was about crowd control, medication and disempowerment. And I came across a lot of people who weren't able to articulate their problems from their point of view because the system didn't enable it. We spent a lot of time playing cards, smoking, because we were allowed to smoke, doing big group stuff, doing relaxation, but nothing to get to the hub of the problem. And the psychological services were the ones supposed to offer that. Yeah. And they were very separate from the whole thing. We didn't have anything to do with them at all. They were in a separate part of the building.
Oh, okay.
So there was no real connection. And if they did want to do something, they would just write up a sheet of behavioural interventions and you'd just do what you were told, like medication. So it's very much medical model psychology at that time. We are talking in the sort of 70s. It was very, very different then. It was, and there was no community psychiatry then. I was there when it started.
Really? So there was no hospital?
Right, there was hospital or GP or whatever, but no community. And it was at the time when Warwick Central closed down Hatton, and people who'd been in Hatton for many, many years started to come over to us. And in my training, I had to go over to Hatton for a bit to get the experience of working in a long-stay psychiatric hospital. And that was deeply, deeply sad and deeply moving, because there were a lot of people there who had been there for a very long time who you wouldn't necessarily put into a psychiatric hospital.
Yeah.
A lot more social problems. And people with epilepsy, people who'd had pregnancies without being married, a lot of people were shuffled off into psychiatry.
Yes.
At a time when it wasn't really acceptable. And there's a lot of people were put into psychiatry for social reasons.
Yeah.
There's one man who had been there. He was in his 90s. He'll be dead now. He was in his 90s, and he'd been put there because he stole a bike and became quite violent, and they decided to consider him as having a mental health problem.
Right, okay.
Psychiatry is really, really important. So the nursing is, I would say, the most important part of my PCP development, because right. I came across a lot of people who couldn't necessarily express things themselves. Yeah. And in hospital, when he was doing general nursing, you weren't actually encouraged to chat to people. So I did a self-characterization sketch that I've used for our current foundation course, and I've talked about how I love chatting, and that nursing didn't allow me to chat, whatever nursing it was. So that was really important for PCP.
Yeah. And then you retrained at some point, didn't
you? Well, then I had children and left, because in those days you had the option to leave. You didn't necessarily have to take a maternity leave. So I left. And then in 1987, I did my first degree.
Right.
And that was when I became a college and university lecturer, and also an open university lecturer as well. So I finished my degree in 1990.
Yeah.
And the lecturing was brilliant. I absolutely loved it. And then I did a master's in psychological counselling in 97, as it was then.
Yeah.
Then I was doing my PCP diploma in 2001. I had a massive amount of things happen all at once. PCP diploma in 2001. I became a chartered psychologist in 2003 through the independent route to counselling psychology. The MDR training, 2006-2007, and then did my doctorate in psychotherapy. So it's quite a lot in a very short space of time. I've worked in Coventry Adult Psychological Services until 2014, and that was very much after having finished my lecturing career, because I met a certain person during my lecturing career, Peter Cummins.
Yeah.
He wanted a link up with a university, and I was at Coventry University, which was near Gilson Hospital.
Yeah.
He wanted a link up, and I wanted supervision.
So that's how that happened.
And it was when he just arrived from Bexley.
Yeah.
Sally and Peter had just arrived from Bexley. So that was right at the beginning of his time in the area, which is great, which was really lucky for me.
And was really Peter lucky. Who introduced you to PCP?
No, it was the Open University, as I was a tutor.
It's
part of their course.
Yeah.
In fact, at that time, it was the only one.
Right.
To do with PCP and grids and the whole thing. It was all part of what the Open University offered. So
yeah.
It's fantastic, the OU. And so that was what sparked my interest. And then Peter developed it. And, of course, eventually I went to work with him.
Yeah.
And left in 2014, retired in 2014 to focus on my private practice, which I've been doing alongside the latter years of working for the NHS. So it's been great. I've been extremely lucky.
I really have.
And it's been well worth having that route.
Yeah.
I'm glad in many ways that I didn't do my first degree straight from school.
Okay.
And of course, in those days,
yeah,
when I was 18, it wasn't necessarily an option. I went to a comprehensive school. Not many of us went to university. It wasn't actively encouraged.
Right.
It was a rarity. And because of that, you didn't see it as an option. It was much more, because it was a comprehensive school, it was much more practical.
Yeah.
Kind of work that we were looking for, and practical training we were looking for. So did me a good service there.
It's
a very powerful beginning thing for anybody. Really, really powerful.
So there's a thread through that of you supporting people whose views aren't expressed.
Yeah.
Which I suppose links into PCP really well.
Oh, right from the very beginning, and believing what they say.
Yeah.
Because when I worked in psychiatry, they didn't believe that people heard voices. They thought they were making them up, or you had to. So it was either they were making them up or they were too mad. Mad was a term used a lot in those days that they were really too mad to engage with.
Right.
You know, medicated them until the voices went away, and then that was that.
Yeah.
It was a real shame. It was a real shame at that time.
And you used your PCP in your doctorate, didn't you?
Oh yeah.
Say a bit about that then. So that was about voice hearers.
It was the self and psychosis, and I was looking at the experiences of people who were labelled as having psychosis and the meaning of the experiences for them. The point, the focus was that when you heard voices, they told you something about what was going on that was wrong in your life.
Yeah.
That was the important part of it, rather than that you were ill and that was the beginning and end of it. And my view was that if people didn't appreciate the meaning of what was happening to them, they couldn't see the point of taking the medication. You know, it's about understanding why you were taking the medication, because they were told you're mad, therefore we've got to medicate it.
Yeah.
Away, rather than, so what is going on for you? And we never really even considered that people with psychosis had, when I was nursing, had anxiety and depression. Of course they do, like everybody else. But it's fancy anxiety and depression. It's with bells on. It's just extra information that wasn't always used. And I was very keen to use all of that information. And when I ran a hearing voices group when I was worked for the trust, and I went to Hearing Voices Network training, and that was fabulous. It was absolutely fabulous. I was involved with people called Chrysalis in Coventry who supporting voice hearers. So I was heavily involved in all of it. And the group we ran at Lamb Street Day Centre, and it was people who'd been in the system for a long, long time, trying to give them chances to speak for themselves. It was great. I was really, I found that to be a very powerful experience, because I'd seen them in the psychiatric unit. Then I saw them as a psychologist. So it wasn't the same people, but that particular long-term voice hearer, and then I was able to see them later on as a specialist.
Yeah,
and that was a really good thread. I have been in contact with people from that time, and they're doing different things with their lives than what you would have expected.
Okay.
Challenging the system.
Yeah.
Okay. So I was really pleased, and it was a happy period. And I was working with day centre officers, so it wasn't just a psychologist coming in and taking control and everything. The day centre officers had a lot to contribute as well.
Okay,
it was a good environment. It wasn't a hospital environment; it was an outside hospital environment.
Okay, from the PCP point of view, how would you construe voice hearing?
For many, it's associated with the articulation of trauma and a reaction to trauma.
Yeah.
It's what couldn't be articulated at the time.
Okay.
And it's like it's frozen.
Right.
I don't recall ever speaking to a single person who was a voice hearer who hadn't had a traumatic experience at some point in their lives. But also, as the Hearing Voices Network used to say, the experience of voice hearing is traumatic if nobody's going to listen to you at all. So it's not just the trauma that's created the voices, it's the experience of voice hearing that's a further trauma. And also the medical model. I wouldn't want to criticise the medical model, because they keep people safe.
Yeah.
That is really important, to keep people safe. But they don't always enhance what could be enhanced to help people understand and work their way through it.
Yeah.
And I used to do a lot of supervision with staff and encourage people just think more widely about psychosis. And I think things have shifted nowadays.
Yeah.
But at that time, It was tough. It was groundbreaking, really, in Coventry.
Yeah, I'm sure it would have been, because at that point people were encouraged to ignore the voices, weren't they, and never to listen to them.
Yeah,
As if that was ever going to be possible.
Yeah. And encouraged not to think about anything that might have happened in their lives.
Yeah.
In the past.
Yeah.
And some of the things that people experienced were very, very difficult for them to deal with on their own. In addition, their carers were too frightened to talk about it.
Yeah.
Their nurses would be too frightened to talk about it. So it's people are just frightened. And yet, if you sit down with it, it's perfectly reasonable.
Yeah.
One of the best services in Coventry was the Coventry Early Intervention Service. I spent some time with them. They were absolutely superb and prepared to listen to the meaning of the experience and prepared to support people. Yeah. They were superb.
Yeah, I think they've really got a very good reputation.
And that was different because they were the younger ones.
Yeah.
That was different compared with the people in rehabilitation. But even in rehabilitation, people have started to think more about them as people rather than as patients, as cases.
Yes, yeah.
Which is ever so different now.
Yeah.
But at that time, yeah, there was some reservation, I would have to say.
Because it's been quite a radical shift, hasn't it? From people was more like an object or a machine to thinking that their experience is having meaning.
Yes. And I was very lucky that Peter Cummins was prepared to take a risk on allowing me to get involved in these things.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also worked, I was also a psychologist attached to the psychiatric unit. I'd worked in as a nurse, strangely.
Yeah.
So I was able to come at it from a different angle when I was on the wards, and I did a lot of supervision.
Yeah.
And then I was able to explain to people how they could review things slightly differently.
Yeah. Okay. So if you think about now then, Di, so how do you use PCP in your work at the moment?
In private practice, strangely, I've actually worked with a couple of people who heard voices, who actually were involved with the system and aren't now, and they just wanted to come and see me for a short piece of work. A lot of trauma.
Right.
A lot of trauma work. Transgender. I've had a couple of clients who've paid to come and see me for transgender issues.
Yeah.
Because my view is that when they go for any kind of change, be it medication or surgery, they've not always ironed out all the problems that they've had in the past. And if those could be ironed out, it can actually help the transition to be easier for them. Or it might make them reflect on why they want the transition, which I think is important.
Yeah.
Work with angry people. Used to run an anger group with Peter in the hospital. That was brilliant. Oh, that was hilarious. It was totally fabulous. Never been in a room with so many angry men and a few angry women in my life. It was really, really good. And PCP has always been, for me, the only way to work with people who are angry. Because again, like people with who hear voices, it is about not being heard.
Yeah.
The anger is an expression of invalidation, and if you don't know why people feel invalidated, then you can't really go forward. So we did anger therapy.
Yes.
That was the most important thing. It wasn't just an anger management group.
Yeah.
Definitely not an anger management group. And of course, we involved the families as well. They came for a session to explain to them kind of things we've been doing in the group. But one of the interesting things for me was that when we were in the group, once the person had looked at their past history of anger, where it was likely to have originated in the family, then the family tree, it started to fade away a bit because they got some kind of context for it. They understood what was happening. And then when they would go home and they weren't as angry, it was almost as though they were doing the anger for the people in the at home.
Yeah.
And other people had to express their own anger themselves.
Yeah.
Which was lovely. Oh. So you could see, I had one chap who worked on the track in a factory that doesn't exist now in Coventry. And he was what they call a track monkey, which meant that they were in and out of the boots of the cars doing various things. And if people wanted a cigarette break or an impromptu tea break, they used to wind him up to get him angry. So that he would start doing his thing, and then they had to stop the track.
Right.
Well, they didn't like it very much. His anger went away. It was wonderful. We just wonderful. Oh, I met football hooligans. I've met all sorts. They're just wonderful, rich.
Yeah.
Team of people with wonderful personalities, and they weren't unpleasant. They were just largely misunderstood, but had been violent, of course, but were misunderstood.
Yes, yeah. And the thing that strikes me about what you've been saying is that you work with people, whatever their problem. So you're always fixed on any particular group, you'll have a go at anything.
I'll definitely have a go at anything, yeah. One thing that's coming through in private practice, apart from the lots of trauma, it's coercive control.
Right. Mm.
PCP is brilliant, the coercive control.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
Because you can start to get a person to think about what's going on in their life.
Yeah.
And what the choices are about their behaviour in response to what's going on, and what choices the person has who's controlling.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what constructs are being employed.
Yeah.
And how the person who's being controlled tries really, really hard to understand the person who's controlling them, so much so that they don't believe they're being controlled.
Yes.
So it's very important to use PCP to look at the concept of control, how the person that they love to need to control them. What was going on for them? What had happened to them? And that can sometimes help people to unlock what's going on. So it's not just about it becoming a legal thing, a divorce and separation. It's about, so you're understanding something here. It's still not the behaviour is still not appropriate, but if we can try and understand what's going on, perhaps the person could be helped.
Yes.
You never know. The partner could be helped. Didn't always work, but at least they were seeing them as people.
Yes.
And I think that's what PCP offers. Everybody can be seen as a person, and everybody has the right to be heard, and they have the right to use their own language.
Yeah.
I can't bear it when people are asked to fill in questionnaires where they are supplied with constructs which don't necessarily mean anything. And I know it's got to be done, and I know it's accepted within the NHS that this is a part of, this is an important outcome measure. I can appreciate all of that. But if that's all you do, it means there's a load of information you're missing.
Yeah.
And that's what used to concern me more than anything. And there were an awful lot of people in Coventry who couldn't read and write.
Yeah.
So they'd be asked to fill all these forms in at home and then bring them, and they may not have filled them in at all.
Yeah.
Family member might have filled them in.
Yeah.
And might not necessarily get the hub of the problem.
Yeah. Or just have a guess, or just tick the third box every time. Yeah.
It's a difficult one. It was a very, very difficult one.
Very. I have the same issue with questionnaires, because sometimes the language they're written in is a language of sort of them and us.
Yeah.
As if it doesn't apply to us all. And I one of the things that you're very big on is the reflexivity of PCP.
Oh, yes, yes. I think you have to, I believe that within PCP, we have an opportunity to find out about ourselves. And when we're working with people, we're actually involving ourselves in their lives, and we have to know a lot about ourselves to be able to do the do the work. But I think it makes us more well-rounded as individuals when we're therapists who've done some work on ourselves, because we know what belongs to us and what belongs to the client.
Yeah.
And I think reflexivity is super duper important.
Yeah.
And having had supervisees who weren't within PCP when I was working in the NHS, I was surprised at some courses that do training that they don't encourage the level of reflexivity I think we need.
Right.
To work with other people. But that was then, and I've been out of the NHS for quite a while. Some courses were good and some courses weren't.
I think it's better now, and also organisations like the NHS are trying to encourage people into reflexive practice groups deal with all of the stuff that they hear in a better way.
Yes.
So that's a good change.
It has moved on a lot, and I think PCP... because you've got that mindset when you're working in the NHS, then other people can see how it works, and they say, well, how are you managing to do that? Isn't that interesting that people are prepared to share things with you? So it's very powerful.
And indeed. Do you have any go-to tools or techniques?
One of my favourites is the community of self.
Oh, just tell people why. They might not know what it is, but...
As you know, the community of self is where we're looking at the different aspects of ourselves that may come into play at any time according to whatever context we might be in. So there'll be things that... go across it that are similar, but it's what about the differences in different contexts? So it's one can have a lot of different aspects of the self, mother self, daughter self, work self, shopping self, friend, there's loads of different ones. And I've discovered with my clients, especially now I'm doing a lot of private work, that they hadn't thought about them cells as having so many different aspects. And so what CBT would describe as all or nothing thinking, they tend to put the self into that category. I'm all depressed, or I'm all anxious, or everything is difficult, rather than say, now is there a part of you that's working? And the beauty of this approach is that you can look at the part that's working, find out why it's working, elaborate why it's working, and then encourage the person to use that part of themselves in different contexts.
Right.
So, as if.
Yeah.
Why not go to work as if you experience people as friendly?
Yeah.
Why not go into work as if you were just generally looking around at things just to see what was going on, rather than going into work and picking something up straight away and being very angry about it? So just trying different aspects of the self in different contexts. I find it works really, really well. And it's been useful. I've been doing some grief work with somebody recently. There's been different aspects of the self that have started to pop out all along the way. And I had one client who, quite randomly, we'd been talking about aspects of the self, this is many years ago, quite randomly just brought in a beautiful picture of the different aspects of herself and some writing about different aspects of herself. And we did an awful lot of work on that. And the images of the different aspects of the self are even more powerful, I've found, than just words associated with it.
Yeah.
Because you can see from the images about whether these aspects are happy or sad, whether they're constrained, whether they're relaxed. There's an awful lot. So I like that. So community of self, one of my go-to ones. I use metaphor and narrative a lot.
Okay.
Really, really important. And within the narrative, I like to get the life story together.
Yeah.
I love it, to get that sense of here you were at the beginning.
Yeah.
What's happened to you in your life to create these problems? And what can you do to help yourself move forward? So Kelly has this idea of a bridge.
Yeah.
Where we help people to see what's on the opposite side of the bridge. He also has the idea of people not being backed into a corner.
Yeah.
That it's our role. If they want to stay in that corner, that's lovely. I don't mind. That might feel safe. But we don't go to them as though there's no escape. We look at what is it that they might look at from the corner and might want to move towards. I love that. ABC, fabulous, looking at dilemmas.
Yeah.
I find is a very powerful thing. Systemic bow tie.
Yeah.
That is really, really good. laddering and pyramiding, obviously, which are really, really good. But to me, the timeline is one of the most powerful ones because it puts experiences and perhaps the development of a community itself into those contexts.
Yeah, okay.
And the PEG grid, I do it with the perceiver element grid. I do it with lots of different people. It was originally intended for use, it was developed by Proctor, and it was originally intended for use within with a family, so you can get them to to write down what was going on for them as you were talking about an event. But I like to use it with the individual person to help them construe themselves from another construer's position.
Yeah, I use it like that too.
I think it is absolutely fabulous. And I did a piece of work with somebody who was transgendered.
Yeah.
And had never really understood what the issue was with the family about becoming transgendered. And we did a PEG grid on what people might be thinking and why they might be thinking about it. And it was a picture of loss. This person hadn't realised that her parents had actually lost the child that was born.
Yeah.
And they were mourning the loss of the child that was born, and they couldn't accept the new person that had emerged.
Right, yeah.
So,
and that was all in PEG.
Yeah, and you have to give people time to mourn the loss and look at the change. So I found that very useful indeed. But I just really want people to be able to tell me their story without me pressurising them to go in a certain direction.
Yeah, okay.
I love that.
And what do you notice when you're, you know, taking a PCP approach? What do you notice about how you work or what happens in the process?
It's about a space to allow a person to elaborate the idea of the self and their issues. To sort of, it puts them centre stage, and to see them working through things, and you can see them increasing the permeability of poles of their constructs to sort of embrace new elements. So I think that's very. I notice that a lot. I also notice that PCP offers hope where other people have said there's no hope.
Yeah.
That's what I've discovered. And that PCP offers them something that they can work with at their own pace, rather than the impression that they've had perhaps from other therapists that they're not keeping up with the protocol.
Yeah.
And I feel that this pacing and going at the person's processing speed, permeability speed, elaboration speed, I found that that is very important indeed. And also recognising when the person can't go anymore. So laddering will help you to do that when the person can't quite reach those connections, and knowing when to stop until the rest of their body catches up.
Yeah.
So if when you're laddering and somebody starts to feel very anxious and they can't talk it through, you know that you've hit some kind of roadblock and they need time to regain their sensibility before you push on, rather than saying it's their fault for not catching up. And I believe that there's an awful lot of construing within the body that tells people when to stop doing something.
Yeah.
So obviously you'll get dissociation.
Yeah,
with some people. Some people will just not be able to talk, and then I start to go into what's going on for them physically to see if we can elaborate that way.
Yeah.
But I have a luxury of being able to do whatever I like, be as creative as I want to be within the theory, so that it can give people space to work for themselves on what they want to do.
It sounds as if what you do is you take the individual and you take them through their therapy rather than the therapy is imposed onto the individual.
Yes, it's their version of therapy. That's the important thing. It's their construction of therapy and their construction of me.
Yes.
And in supervision, I often looked at what they might think of me being present.
Yeah,
in the room, and working through a PEG grid or a systemic bow tie, you know, in supervision, just to help me unpack.
Yeah, okay. And that, I think that's the really useful thing about PCP, that any technique we use with anybody else, we can use with ourselves.
Yeah.
It'll be just as useful.
Yes, just as useful. And it's also very helpful for personal development, but also therapeutic development, because you can sit down and reflect on what's just happened without telling yourself off all the time, without being angry with yourself. You know, what went wrong in that interaction? So if you can't get to your supervisor straight away, you can use your tools to to work it out. In addition, though, you can also use the tools in your daily life if there's a problem.
Yeah, okay, thanks. And is there something that you've done, or a training you've attended, or something that you do in terms of CPD that's been really helpful to develop your non-shown skills?
Yeah, EMDR training.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Absolutely brilliant. Obviously, I've done the a lot of PCP training and CPD, but when I learnt about EMDR, I could marry the two.
Right.
And it helped me to have the confidence to work a lot more with what was going on with people physically.
Yeah.
And it's given me some techniques to help people manage a level of anxiety that's too much when I'm talking. So I can do tapping and all sorts of different things. So when you're doing it, according to the EMDR Association, you have to follow certain protocols.
Yeah.
But some things can be used to help somebody within the session.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Which I do. It was lovely to be able to marry the two, and of course, as I'm doing quite a lot of work with people who've been traumatized, it's great to have that in your back pocket, because some people just sometimes cannot tolerate the distress that comes up when you're talking about the issues.
Yeah,
on your past. They just can't.
Yeah.
So I find it invaluable. I really do.
And so you weave that into your PCP therapy?
Yeah. I do. Really good. Really, really good. And of course, obviously, all my doctorate and everything. Oh, and all the academic stuff I've done has been really, really helpful. Yeah. But they have been one of the most useful things, I must say.
Okay. Oh, and do you know, if you think about people who are new to PCP, or maybe they've done the foundation course, maybe they've just come across a few things, what would you suggest to them that would support their development?
PCP is organic. Allow it to flow. So there's you and the client, and the client and you and the client together. There's lots of things going on in the room. So allow the flow to happen. Don't just write down a list of questions you must get through before the end of the session. Just allow people to have the pace. Give them the pace to tell their story. Respond to them. Listen very carefully. Listen out for their constructs. Listen out for the words that they're using. Yeah. And reflect the words back so they know that you've heard them.
Right.
Don't reinterpret it quickly into, oh, that means this and that means that. You know, ask them and ask them what they mean.
Yeah.
That's really important, rather than just making an assumption. When you're training, do all your techniques on yourself, because then you know how it feels to do them before you start dumping them on some poor soul that just comes through the door that doesn't really understand what's going on at all. I think techniques are great. Really love the techniques, but you'd be very gentle, because these are just people who may have come from other forms of therapy.
Yeah.
They're stressed. They freeze. They're uncertain about you as a person. They don't know what they're looking for.
Yeah.
And so I think this is about trying techniques on yourself. So you have to know what's going on in your construing system and what's likely to be experienced by the person, level of distress. And if you use techniques with people, do not throw them at them just before they go home. ever do that. Mm. If you're going to use a technique, you have to be really, really careful to explain what's going on, to build up to it, and allow lots and lots and lots of feedback time, because I think it's a dangerous idea to believe that you could do something dramatic before the end of a session and expect people to go home and tolerate that level of distress.
Yeah.
Because the beauty of PCP is that it is really, really powerful. So it's powerful in small, safe doses.
Yeah.
Not throwing things at people because you can.
Yes.
And yeah, knowing when to stop.
Right.
Knowing when not to push too hard, unless you've got plenty of time.
Which I guess goes back to the supervision, that if sometimes you don't notice it yourself, but it helps when you're talking about the case. If somebody says, "Ooh, that was a lot in that session," or, you know, how did the person respond? Because that's a big stuff that you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And in my private practice, and I used to do it in the NHS as well, but I would encourage people to contact me in the office when I was working in the NHS, and by my phone, with emails or texts or anything, in private practice, and they rarely do, strangely, but I give them the option of contacting me if they didn't understand what I was saying, if they felt distressed afterwards, if I'd opened something up and hadn't realised it.
Right.
And they don't use it, so clearly they like the idea of having it and not necessarily using it. But that's about me saying it may be uncomfortable after the session, I'm here.
Yeah.
And they seem to manage very well indeed, but it's just having that door left open a little bit.
But it sounds to me that they manage well because you manage the whole thing around it, and you're taking them trying to pace it for that individual, and be very conscious of the time that in the session and what happened before and their traumas and all of that together.
Yeah, you have to. So I think a newbie needs to think about the person as a whole.
Yeah.
And think about what they're going back into when they leave you.
Yes, yes.
Because they could be going back into absolutely anything.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't squash down daily life just for the sake of therapy.
Yes. That's a great point to end on, Di. Thank you. Thank you so much. That's been fantastic.
It's been a pleasure. I hope you've been able to get what you wanted.
Okay, so that was the interview for today. I'm hoping that you've found that interesting and useful. And I think one of the things that Diane does is show that people can have changes of direction, changes of career. They can have a lucky break where they come across something that really makes sense to them. But they can also have some parts of their career path that are quite planned and thought out in terms of where they're going to go with whatever qualification they're doing. And I think, you know, Diane starting as a nurse, then retraining as a counselling psychologist, having been a teacher in the middle, is a really useful range of experiences. So in her work with PCP, she can use all of that to add to what she has to say to a client or to somebody who's working with an organisation or for a bit of coaching. One of my persistent experiences with Diane is that she has great energy. She is lively, enthusiastic, and great at encouraging other people. And it's no surprise that she was willing to be interviewed for this podcast, because she also wants other people to be able to find PCP and use it. So thank you, Diane, very much indeed. Fantastic that you were willing to talk to me. And I'm hoping that that will help people to consider what they might use in their own career paths. Okay. So we're done with November. The next one will be out, it'll be nearly New Year. I'm not sure what that one's going to be about yet. It will probably be me talking about something. So remember, if you've got particular ideas or interests or things you want to have a PCP take on, can you email them to me? I will try try to include them. If you found this useful and you're not already on my mailing list, I'd really recommend that you get on it, because what you will get is a notification that the podcast is out by email. You will also get details of any references or useful articles that are related to the topics considered. I do put them on the website as well, but you'll get them in an email, which is quite handy. You don't have to remember to do anything then. Okay, so have a great December. Hopefully your Christmas will be good, even if you are locked down, and you'll find some way of having a bit of fun and relaxation, but also able to celebrate with your family and friends as much as is possible. And I'll see you just before the new year. Okay, bye for now.